But when you have a $200,000 a month business, like tracking, keeping track of all these deliverables is a huge pain to do manually. And so we do it all automatically.
Hey guys, we got another episode of the One Podcast here. I'm pretty pumped for this one. We got the Ops King founder, Ryan Hildebrand, here. He's big on Twitter. He's calling in from Georgia over there and far beyond the land, far beyond. But Ryan,
the country of Georgia. Yeah, way over in Europe. Yeah, so my name is Ryan. I am the automation side of Ops Kings, or run the automation team. We have an ops side as well. So basically work with businesses to help them speed up, either in manual mode first and then in auto with technology, with no-code automations and Airtable and dashboards and things like that. Canadian, super into travel and endurance sports and all the fun things. So yeah, that's a little recap.
Nice. Obviously, we're a community group for kind of early stage would-be entrepreneurs, people who are just making the leap. You're a guy who's done that kind of career to entrepreneur transition recently. Do you want to talk a little bit about what was your career beforehand? When did you decide to take that jump? And
Yeah. So I have an engineering background, graduated in 2009, and was working for an engineering company for 4.5 years, and then took the leap to freelance after that. Then I ran a coaching offer for a while, that B2C coaching offer. That didn't work as well. And then a few years ago, met a friend of mine who was running a lot of things manually in his agency. And I looked at it and was like, I think I can use some of my engineering stuff to help my friend. And it took me a few years to realize, after his business went from 10K per month to 50 in the space of a couple of years, I eventually got smart and realized like maybe I should make this a separate offer. So I went out on my own after that, doing automation, and met my co-founder last July, so about 10 months ago. And nice. We've been partnering up, and now Ops Kings is 9 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that all happened in a span of how long?
It's about 10 months.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. And were you doing it freelance for a little bit before you, or consulting one-to-one before you met the co-founder and started doing it?
I was trying to. Had a few clients. So probably from around this time last year was when I first got a domain name and things like that. And met my co-founder really shortly after that. So I did have clients on my own. And then just like having a co-founder with complementary skill sets was a pretty big no-brainer.
Nice. So I guess, so you talked about like that kind of experience you had with the growing the company from 10 to 50K. What's for people who are not familiar with automation or ops in general, what are some of the things that you or your company does to do that? Because I think most people think about increasing revenue or like whatever with a small business in terms of lead gen or advertising. Yeah. But what are you covering?
Yeah, so when you're first starting and you have zero revenue, you just need to spend as much time as possible doing marketing and sales, right? And then what always happens is you get to, depending on the model, whether it's UGC or e-com or coaching or whatever, you get to a threshold where you start to have to turn down clients, or you can't spend as much of your day doing sales and marketing because you have to chase the fulfillment side of things, right? And if you don't do that, then people churn, your team quits, or you can't bring on team members profitably because it just takes too much effort to try to track all the different tasks that you have to do for your fulfillment. And so really what we do is some people think of automation as a cost-cutting thing. Hey, my Filipino VA is making $1,000 per month, but if I cut their hours, like I can save $100 a month, right? Which is, we like to think about it as a growth enabler. So like if you were able to take on unlimited clients, and that's a tough thing to imagine if you're just starting out, but if you were able to take on unlimited clients and spend all your time aggressively marketing, like how big could your business get? And so that's the kind of business we serve, is the kind of business where depending on their model, Someone's trying to slack huddle.
Hey, listen, we're an entrepreneurship podcast, so we celebrate that type of stuff.
Right. Anyways, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, basically it depends highly on the model though. So if you have a coaching offer, a lot of people will get stuck like around like maybe 50 to 100K per month, right? So it's like e-com is even higher in terms of revenue. But if it's like cold email, you're going to struggle like around 10 to 15K, if not sooner, just tracking like all the different things, all the different campaigns, tracking client health. And so what we actually do is we go in and we start by building like a custom database and a custom infrastructure and dashboards and things like that for the business so that things can go faster in manual mode. And then what we'll do is add on automations to do things like when a landing page or a deliverable is completed and needs client approval, we'll send a thing in Slack automatically so that the client just presses a button, which if you're at a small scale, doesn't sound like a big deal, but when you have a $200,000 a month business, like keeping track of all these deliverables is a huge pain to do manually. And so we do it all automatically.
Nice. So I guess, how did you get like good at this? Are you just a kind of guy who's like into systems? So, and
I was,
you
know, always,
I read somewhere you're calling yourself an autist, so to speak.
So I was always really good at math. Okay. I had the highest math mark in my entire 900 person graduating class. So I was good at math. I was good at science. I have an engineering degree, so that helped. And then for 4.5 years, I was working for an engineering company doing like process automation for Nestle, Mars, and like big manufacturing companies. So I got good at it from working for somebody else who was smarter than me, basically.
Nice. Cool. So what are like, are there any sort of like very interesting use cases or things that surprised you where you tweaked or you built out some complex thing where it just like really took off or just had some type of insane impact?
Yeah, I'd say like a lot of the really interesting ones, especially for early stage people, are around lead gen. So like you can do things like scrape Upwork if you're finding like agency jobs on Upwork and notify you when jobs that match your criteria are detected with the budget and all this kind of stuff. So you can be first to apply and that becomes like your little Upwork CRM. I've done the same thing for Twitter. So I have every single day my new Twitter leads are gathered. They're scored based on the words in their bio and their location. And,
nice.
And so I have a bunch of formulas that say, oh, you said your location was Toronto, Ontario. Oh, you're in Canada. Or you said your location was London. You must be in the UK. Or there's like an American flag or a Canadian flag or a British flag. So it classifies locations. You can score leads. We had one client that is real estate. And so they were brokering real estate deals. And so it's a really simple, the actual tech is relatively simple, but you can use like a simple tech to get a list of websites and then actually visit the website, extract the text from the website, classify what kind of business it is. So if you're doing this with like e-com, you can say, is it a clothing store or a beauty store or whatever? And then send them a custom proposal that's, hey, here's your marketing proposal. Here's case studies where we've helped other beauty stores get this result. Here's a bunch of example pages for beauty stores and mass send out like marketing assets or sales assets to prospects. So the one real estate agent or a real estate broker company that was doing this, they had a big team of setters and stuff like that. But the owner was like, hey, I'm on track for like $600,000 a month just from honestly like raw volume. Raw volume and a lot of appointment setters.
Nice. Okay. So we talk to a lot of people about just like building different types of business types, right? SaaS versus a consulting agency, marketing agency, et cetera. How do you deal with dealing with different industries? Isn't that confusing for you to deal with the different processes? And now you got to do case studies for different industries. Is that a difficulty, or is it somewhere between?
So it was difficult at first. And over time, we've gotten just like more data points. So this is just a couple months old, but I was observing the different systems in businesses and realize like there's different archetypes for how data is stored. So we just talked to a guy like actually just before this call, he does like home services. And so he gets an elderly patient and he has to go vet a bunch of people that could do like home care for that person. But like that model is it's exactly the same data model as a UGC business that has 10 concepts to do per month. And they have to go source creators for those concepts, which is, again, is exactly the same as like a hiring agency where they have one position and they have to go get candidates. And so all of these systems, even though they're in different industries, they're all like, you just switch the names around and they're all the same. So we've realized there's different archetypes of businesses or of systems rather, and there's different archetypes of tasks. And so what we tend to do is we'll do a call with the client initially with the sales call or afterwards where we find out about the system, but we always slot it into certain archetypes, and based on the volume, it just tells us what KPIs are going to be necessary. And then the task archetypes tell us like what kind of interface design would be most appropriate for those, for the systems in the business. So it's easier now, but again, it's like this, it's a stereotypical answer, like practice makes perfect. So it's the same as everybody else in that sense.
Nice. Okay. You mentioned in the beginning, like getting up to a team of 9. How have you thought about hiring and bringing on team members and just like managing the costs and operational side of your business?
Yeah. So we initially had just like freelancers that were paid by the project. And so we just had, so we have like our markup.
Like most
basically.
People. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think freelancers were massively helpful. Our initial team came in just from like personal brand is like actually... It is really handy for getting really smart people that just want to genuinely learn from you. So you get the extra, like we would have had to pay a lot more had I not had a personal brand. So that was helpful with the budgeting. And then I think a lot of it has been helped because if any of our team members can't accomplish something, like I can step in and rescue them. So they learn from me. But we have that buffer in a sense. So if I was trying to run a business of any other kind, it would be much more expensive for staff because I would effectively have to hire a very senior person and pay for a very senior person. So yeah, we did that. We've got one of our team members came in through a recruiting agency and everybody else came in through inbound.
Nice. Just in building, I think you've had a fairly... It seems like you had a great idea coming in of like what you were servicing and like the niche and whatnot. What would you say have been like some key factors of having such a successful 10-month or whatever, 1-year start to your business? Did you have mentors coming in? Is it the co-founder really? What are the biggest factors?
Yeah. So I took a coaching program. It's called Client Ascension. Okay. It was great. That's where I met my co-founder as well. So had that in terms of mentorship around like marketing stuff. Yeah.
Personal they do brand YouTube has helped stuff a lot. Too, right?
Yeah, so personal brand has helped a lot just from establishing credibility. There's lots of people that do what we do, but we have way more case studies and way more social proof. And there's, like, I think the engineering background that I have has allowed me to solve more difficult problems. And so I can just share the more difficult solution. And it just blows everybody else out of the water. So the personal brand has helped a lot with just sharing, hey, we built this. Hey, we built this. Hey, we built this as well. And now that we have a team that's doing the majority of the building, we're building even more. So we do about 100 features per week for clients, which is like, that's a lot of screenshots. That's a lot of examples. That's a lot of stuff that we can reference on sales calls for stuff. So that's helped. Honestly, I think like probably every niche is a bit different. What's interesting for like automation stuff now is a lot of people are talking about it because Zapier is a thing and Airtable is a thing and everybody knows, hey, I should automate. So it might be a bit different for our niche versus others. So I don't know if I can really like make broad statements there, but what's worked well for us is just sharing client results, sharing stuff we've built, and people like proof, right? So one of the things that I've observed is if you go on Twitter today, a lot of people will be preaching about, you should do this. Like, this is how you should market. This is how you should build code. This is how, whatever. And nobody wants, like, you sound like a clown if you're like a 19-year-old kid talking about life advice. Like, it's just ridiculous. Whereas if you say, hey, this is a thing we built for clients, hope you find inspiration from it. We're not trying to be preachy about anything. We're not trying to claim that we're better operators than business owners that are multi-six-figure per month or $1 million a month business owners. But we can just say, hey, we built this. If you want something similar, you can ask us. So I think that strategy has worked well as well. Rather than sharing advice, we just share, like, we built this thing.
Yeah, just like one follow-up on that as far as you mentioned just like the accelerator, client ascension thing. That's Fazio.
Yeah.
What do you find is like the moat? Is it the community? Is it like the what's being taught? What do you find out of that a program like that? What do you find is the most What's the thing that, you know what I'm saying, that helps you
right
in that early right entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah, so the community was good. Like I said, I met my co-founder in the community, and yeah, some of our initial clients came just from like referrals from the community.
Sure.
And networking. And so that was really good. Like, the thing was with any kind of community or network is you actually have to be good. Like, there's no marketing hack in the world that like will overcome you not being good at what you do. So I'd say that's super important. It's a business accelerator course, right? So there's not like the silver bullet of, oh, this one tip was like amazing. It's just, you just do a lot of everything. The coaching calls were intense. There's a lot of them, and we weren't able to go on to all of them simply because we had clients. So it worked. Yeah, I think that everything works. You just have to do it. The benefit of coaching is you get advice from people that have been there already. So, yeah.
Nice. So I also noted in further relation to that, one thing interesting that I saw that you did like a client meetup at American Social in Tampa.
In Tampa. So
I had thought with my previous marketing agency that I sold, I thought of doing like a client meetup in Miami at American Social, like a similar type of thing. Did you find that like type of thing? Because a lot of people have like agency businesses with clients, like the in-person meetup. Is that something that you found was like a great value to your clients?
So the video from that got us one of our team members. And so he saw that video and he was like, oh, like these guys are legit. So I think doing.
All right.
Yeah. So I'm pretty bullish on like in-person things.
Same.
In the age of like internet people, nothing gains trust like in person. We were all actually there anyway for the Client Ascension event in Tampa. So it wasn't like people like flew to Tampa just to see us. But yeah, I'd say it paid for itself. It wasn't like that one thing that exploded growth though.
I got it.
Right?
Yeah. It's not like it's not like a kind of
like struggling to grow your agency, you probably shouldn't book plane tickets for everybody to meet you in Dubai. That's not going to be the thing that helps it grow. We are actually thinking of doing an ops meetup in Croatia in the summer or in the fall or something like that. It's one of those things where it's okay, I would want to go there anyway. Tony already lives there, so it's not logistically difficult. There's no one thing that's like the magic bullet that just fixes everything. You have to be good at what you do. You have to tell people about stuff that you're building and what you've done so that people notice, are aware of what you're capable of. You have to get good results and do testimonials or case studies and all this kind of.
Okay, so that totally makes sense to me. What biggest challenges, what are the real like pain points for where you are
in
your current business?
I think offer is really important because for tech, you don't want to set the expectation initially that you're going to just fix everything and it's like this unknown scope and everything is going to be rainbows and puppy dogs in a week, because the reality is it does actually take time to build things and to understand what the process needs. We've changed how we position things. That's been a pain point, because if a client expects initially, oh yeah, all those problems that you're talking about, we're going to fix them in a week. If their expectation is not aligned, then they're going to have a bad experience and you have to recover. So, for example, we switched recently to... We were originally building out like an Airtable base in... So the business is faster in manual mode with like dashboards and all this kind of stuff before we added on automations. And just simply changing that from like a... It's going to be X dollars per month and we're going to do the Airtable thing first, to changing it from now the Airtable thing is like the first fixed price project. And if it takes a month, it takes a month, and if it takes 2 months or 3 months, that's fine. We just want to get it right and do all the change management and tinker with it. Even just change, even simply changing that from the monthly thing, which the longer it takes, the more the client's charged, to a fixed price thing, which is we're going to try to get it right and tinker with it. Even like changes like that have made a difference. I think if I wasn't very technical, then team would be tough. Because if someone was trying to run the exact agency that we have and they didn't have the technical skill to be able to see what was good code and what wasn't, then it just wouldn't, it would right. be a disaster. So I know for me, if I was running a different kind of agency, it would be a different thing. Yeah. And then type of outreach, like how you get customers is important, I think. So we've gotten a lot of people through inbound. We haven't really cracked outbound yet. We're still working on cracking outbound. So
I have some help for you there.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, so we got, yeah, that's where we're at. We're new still, getting it going. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So just like closing things out, what would you say has been like the biggest kind of lesson that you learned that you would give to other people who were maybe in your position a year ago before you took this big jump and blew up the agency? Yeah.
You need to outsource as much as possible because you need to free your mind to do as much marketing as possible. You should be like
out of you.
Like every every single moment of every single day you should be doing marketing and sales. If you're not, if you have to do any bit of fulfillment, maybe that's like you hire a freelancer, maybe it's you do automation. But really I think that was a huge, even just to free my mind from having to worry about it. Like we technically could have waited longer to hire, but it was massively helpful for my own like mental bandwidth to be able to hire stuff and say, okay, like you're doing this client work, I'm not dealing with it. They would pass it through me for quality, but that was a major shift. And then the other one was like distribution. So there's people that are more technically skilled, but they just don't have the distribution, so no one knows they exist. So I would say that like those two things, people have to know who you are and you have to get out of fulfillment as fast as possible so you can do marketing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's super valid. Yeah. Ryan, where can people find you and what are the types of companies that you think would benefit most from OpsKings and who should reach out?
So I'd say the agency types that we work with the most are like UGC, SEO, like SEO content type things, and cold email tend to be the most like data intensive. Hiring,
interesting.
Not so much info products, yes, or like coaching consulting. When you get up to like multi six figures per month, it becomes more logistically intense. Recruiting, real estate, that kind of thing. Like B2B services mainly would be the main niches. E-com and info products, no, but pretty much everybody else. Yeah, and then I'm on Twitter. I share a lot of like tips on automation, examples of stuff we built. And so my Twitter handle is impossible to spell, but you guys figure it out. It's RM Hildebrandt, and Hildebrandt is with DT at the end. Or opskings.com, and all the social links and stuff are on there.
Nice. Cool. Yeah. And this is just a last question, bonus question for me, Ryan. It's just an optimization question. It seems that you have a mullet under that hat. Do you find that the mullet isn't effective?
It's like long hair anyway. Yeah.
It's just long hair under the hat.
It's just super long. Yeah. I'm going for like a nerdy Jason Momoa.
What's the optimal length is what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah. A nerdy Jason Momoa.
What's the optimal length? So the optimal length is, at least for me, it's probably like this short. So I used to have hair that was like very similar in length to yours. And then I decided just to change it up. The problem is,
do you have to A/B test that, or
so? Chicks don't like hair that's too short because everybody has hair that's too short. You're just like everybody else.
It's nothing to touch. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I've heard women say, "Oh, you look better with longer hair." I do need to get a haircut.
Interesting.
But yeah, so I'm more of I'm the fun loving one of OpsKings. Tony, my co-founder, is more buttoned up. But we're like a good like yin yang.
You gotta have the
so
two.
I'm like the renegade who's
good cop, bad
screw
cop.
Screw it. Let's just share all this crazy stuff and all these cool like automation hacks. And he's okay. So what we're gonna do with the operations is this.
Nice.
Yeah, I like to. I actually have this is my. You want to see my YouTuber hat? This is my YouTuber hat.
I want to see the YouTuber hat. Yeah. Yeah.
So nice. Yeah, just like the most obnoxious. So it's just math for those who, if you're listening. Yeah, I like to be a little bit, I think it's worthwhile being a little bit more obnoxious than the average person if you want
Understood.
To get attention for things. So
yeah, I agree with that 100%. Ryan, thank you for coming on. This is the Wantrepreneur Podcast. Cool. How can you see into my eyes?
soul.